Welcome, everyone. This is your host, Joe Cristiano, and you're listening to Star of the Beast Network Evening Edition. Star of the Beast Network is your independent streaming internet radio and libertarian voice broadcasting from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, October 29th, 2006, and sponsored by Ranch Acres Audiology in Tulsa. Call 918-749-7711 for all your hearing needs. Ranch Acres Audiology, where hearing is fashionable. This broadcast is your antidote to popular talk radio, regardless of its political affiliation, where you are expected to do more than listen. You are asked to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, you will find that libertarian principles of individual freedom are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Berlin, Rome, Paris, or Stalingrad. Folks, we must starve the beast. Now, before the beast in the form of bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty, it is time to shed conventional thinking regarding political structures. We need to be revolutionaries in thought. Only after we recognize what government is doing to our freedom will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. We are dedicating this program to the Peace House of Tulsa. The Peace House pursues justice through education and nonviolent action, practicing kindness and compassion for all beings so that peace may prevail on earth. The Peace House of Tulsa. Good luck, folks. During my broadcast, we may be reached via AOL Instant Messenger at STB Internet Radio at AIM.com or Skype Internet Phone. Simply dial Star of the Beast, one word. If you miss our live broadcast, it will be repeated 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Otherwise, please send us your comments and your questions to me at liberty@starofthebeast.net. And now, on to our program. With us today, we have, as our guest, Jimmy Cook. Jimmy Cook has managed two political campaigns, has been the Oklahoma State Coordinator for a presidential campaign, is currently the state chairman of the Libertarian Party of Oklahoma, is president of the College Hill Toastmasters, a recent graduate of Leadership Rogers County, and is on their 2006 and 2007 planning committee, and is the regional coordinator for the Oklahoma Coalition of Independence, and had been in the past affiliated with Citizens for a Sound Economy. Tonight he is here to discuss the proposals for open primaries in Oklahoma and the restrictions placed on third parties by ballot access laws. Good evening, Jimmy, and thank you for being here this evening.
Good evening, Joe, and thank you for having me here.
May I ask you a couple of questions about your introduction before we get into ballot access?
Ask me anything.
Can you say a few words about Leadership Rogers County, please?
Leadership Rogers County, it's conducted almost as if it were a class. Every month you go to different areas of the community, and you might look at industrial one month, where you visit different industries and you look at the sorts of job opportunities that are available and the sorts of products that may be made in that area. So one month we went to the healthcare facilities and looked at the health department and that sort of thing. What they're trying to do is they're trying to groom people to become more involved in their communities as far as not necessarily activism, but just to try to get people aware of the sorts of problems in those communities and think of ways they can fix some of those things.
Well, you're very active in the community, apparently, from your introduction. The Coalition of Oklahoma Coalition of Independence. Now, that sounds interesting because I know there are several independent parties or I guess, organizations in Oklahoma. Can you tell us a little bit about that as well?
What we're trying to do with the Oklahoma Coalition for Independence is there are 209,000 independent voters, registered independent voters in the state, out of approximately 2 million voters. That's about 10% of the voters in Oklahoma. And those people really do not have any sort of voice. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to encourage independents to run for office and trying to help people become aware that they have independent choices, so that those 209,000 people get out and vote on election day. And that's one of the main things we're trying to do, is to recruit independent voters and provide some sort of support for those people, regardless of party.
I suspect this will somehow lead us into ballot access and what you're going to talk about tonight as well.
Yeah, those things will be tied together.
Okay, very good. Now, I'm like the average Joe Blow on the street. My perception of voting is out west, everyone in town got together, showed up at a local community center or a church or maybe the sheriff's office, and they wrote someone's name in and they put it in a box and they counted the votes, and whoever had most, the largest number of votes, won. It was a very simple system. And to me, in my own mind, it's still a very simple system. What seems to be the problem?
Well, leading up to the general election, and the general election is basically just a contest of it could be a contest between different political parties or different ideologies. You can vote based upon which candidate seemed to stimulate your interest the most. But before that, just to be on the ballot in Oklahoma, it requires a 5%. You have to collect petition signatures equal to 5% of the last presidential election in order to be recognized as a political party, which means that the Libertarians in 2004 would have had to have gotten 57,000 signatures of registered voters. And then you have to get a raw amount of signatures of about 75,000 people, because some of those people may have signed the petition twice or that sort of thing. So just to call yourself a political party, you have to do this. And we have to do this every 4 years. So although it looks like you have choices on election day, you really only end up having two by the time it's over with, unless the party has about $100,000 to spend. Because it costs roughly $1 per signature to get petition signatures in the state of Oklahoma. So by the time they've done all this and they've raised all the money to get the signatures and they get the signatures, no one really wants to run for office because they're just tired. They're just tired of the political process.
Well, how does this compare with other states? Do the other states have the same problem as we do?
No, actually, Oklahoma is recognized by most people that are experts in this sort of field as the worst state in the nation. Some states require just a filing fee. Some states require 500 petition signatures. Oklahoma, until 1972, required 5,000 petition signatures. And that was all that was required. And each individual candidate paid his filing fee and ran for office under that party's banner.
Well, then if I wanted to run and I was not a Republican, not a Democrat, I would then have to run as an independent?
Yes, you would have to consider yourself an independent, regardless of your real party affiliation.
I suspect then what that does is people may identify with a candidate, but then the major parties don't have another party that they have to identify against, if you will.
Yes.
Because independent is a general term. Anybody can be an independent.
Yeah,
so there's no definition. I could be, if I was a communist, could I run as an independent?
You would have to in Oklahoma.
Okay, so if I say I'm independent, that doesn't define me whatsoever as far as a...
No, all that means is that you're not affiliated with the Democrats or the Republicans. Most of them are not independent voters. Some people that are registered independents are upset with the Republican Party and don't want to be affiliated with it, or some are Democrats that would rather not be affiliated for some reason or another. A lot of Democrats and Republicans have some of the ideologies that some of the smaller parties have and would be willing to support them if they had the option. But due to the way the laws are set up in Oklahoma, they don't.
If we look at a history, we've had a two-party system infinitum. There must have been a reason to have a two-party system. I think of some of the third world countries where they have 45 parties running at the same time, and there appears to be total mass confusion, fractions all over the place fighting each other for the loyalty or maybe cohesively, you know, cohesively, you know, getting people. But not having a two-party system, does that cause more havoc? Are there any unintended circumstances if once we have three or four parties, you know, running at the same time?
Canada's got a pretty stable political system as far as their elections go, and they allow a lot more freedom. Other states in the United States that have softer ballot access laws don't have the same problems that you would anticipate with them. And I like to look at this analogy. If I go to the grocery store, I can tell the difference between the Del Monte brand of corn versus the yellow can of corn, you know, just the store brand. And I have preferences, and that's really all that registering as a party affiliation is. It's a preference. And it shouldn't be confusing. If you identify with someone, you're willing to vote for that person based upon their preferences as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now, with a two-party system, I know where I'm taking you away from your presentation, but I want to get clarification first, and maybe for our listeners as well. Under a two-party system, I guess there's an assumption that if two people were running, one person receives 51% of the votes or more, the other receives less than 50%, 49 or less. So you have a clear winner. You have someone who is voted in by the majority, and then the minority has to just buy into that. You know, it's a winner take all. With three parties, a person can actually be elected and have only 34% of the vote.
Yes. With it being a winner take all system the way that it is, we'll have districts in Oklahoma that may be primarily a Democrat district or maybe primarily a Republican district. So let's say that you're in a Republican district and you're a Democrat. You may choose not to run for office in that district out of fear that you're just going to waste your money. So that Republican will run unopposed in that district because they will run Democrats in districts where they think they can win. Because really, in a winner-take-all situation, they're only interested in how many seats they control. And the more seats they control, the more restrictions they can apply towards opposing parties. So that's part of the problem with the two-party system. One group will do whatever they can to maintain control so that they can restrict that other party further so that they can continue to maintain more control. If there's more than one party, it's no longer balanced one side or the other. Issues get brought out more because it no longer is about maintaining party control or maintaining power. It's about trying to solve issues.
Are there instances when a local politician, I'll call it someone who's running for Oklahoma Congress or Oklahoma Senate, I'm not talking about the national, run unopposed?
Well, just this year, we have 38 Oklahoma House races where they're running totally unopposed.
38.
In 2004, all five of the U.S. House races ran unopposed. Or all five of them ran, and they had landslides of more than 20%. During 1982 to 2004, 60 incumbents sought re-election for the U.S. House. All 60 of them won. So there are a lot of cases where this happens, where the winner-take-all system just continues to maintain the same power structure, and things don't get changed and they don't get fixed.
Okay, we recognize some of the problems now. We know where we are. Okay, we're going to talk about ballot access, and we're going to talk about open primaries, right? Is that what you want to talk about tonight?
Yes,
okay.
Yes.
Why don't you take away on that and tell us how this is going to solve some of our problems here in Oklahoma, Jimmy?
Okay. We have, in Oklahoma, we have a semi-closed primary system. And what that means is Democrats and Republicans vote in Democrat or Republican primaries, depending on which registration they have. The difference beyond that is that they can invite independents if they choose to. They don't have to necessarily, but they can.
Have they in the past invited independents to vote in their primary?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't followed up on that statistic very much. What happened in 2000 was the Libertarian Party of Oklahoma wanted to invite everyone to run in to vote in their primaries, regardless of party affiliation. And it was really an attempt to get more voters out, to get them to see who would vote for them, you know, based on their party affiliations, to see how many people were paying attention to them. And that would have been a voluntary open primary system. But what's being proposed now by a lot of editors of local newspapers is a totally open primary system. So you've got the semi-closed primary right now, which we have, which is very restrictive. Then we've got the voluntary open primary system, which the libertarians have been in favor of. And then we have a full open primary, which can be as restrictive as the first one. Because in an open primary system, people will, in cases where there are only Democrats, that you're in a Democratic district, someone might vote against that person just so that they can change the district's profile. You know, it ends up causing a bigger problem.
Are you saying that a person of one party will vote for the less desirable candidate in another party in an open primary?
Yeah, I think that has a potential of happening. Let's say you've got two Democrats in a Democrat-controlled district. Republican voters could make an effort to vote for the less desirable candidate so that in the general election, their Republican candidate is facing someone that has a smaller chance of winning and actually could potentially take over that district. It has a potential for it. I don't know how likely that is to happen. But it's removing the choice of the political party. Oh. You're not allowing them to make a decision to invite people into their primaries. You're enforcing it on them.
You are not then advocating open access to open primaries then?
No, I'm not really advocating open primaries. I would like to see a voluntary system like the one that we had proposed in 2000. In fact, we lost a lawsuit in 2002. The judge determined that it was not an unnecessary burden on our First Amendment rights, which brings up a discussion as to what are rights and what are privileges. A right is something, a natural right that you're born with, and voting is one of those things, and a privilege is something that, it's like asking your dad to borrow the car keys on Saturday night. It's a privilege, but it's not really a right.
Right.
And the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals overturned that and said that, yes, it was an unnecessary burden on our First Amendment rights. And in 2005, the U.S. Supreme Court overturned that ruling. So basically, at this point, we're not allowed to invite people into our primaries if we choose to. But it is still being proposed that it may be mandatory to invite other people into our primaries. So they're not willing to allow us to have choice, but they're willing to allow an open primary system.
Okay. Where do you see this taking us, and if the revisions were made as you would recommend, what do you think would happen?
What would happen is most likely the parties wouldn't choose to use the option. A Democrat may not necessarily want that option. Smaller parties would probably prefer the option because it would give people the opportunity to vote with their conscience. Let's say that there are three people running in a Libertarian primary, and one candidate has a much better chance of accomplishing something. He's got better ideas. He seems like he would actually do something. You can vote for that person. You can vote with your conscience. You may not vote for him in the general election, but you can vote for someone that you think might do the best job.
And that person doing the voting could be a Republican or a Democrat in this case.
Yes.
It could be anyone.
Any registration.
Provided that you're a registered voter.
Yes.
All right. Now, but how does that help, for example, the Libertarian Party or any independent party in the overall scheme of things by doing it that way?
It allows us to get larger vote totals than we have gotten in the past. People that may not have necessarily voted for us because they didn't think we had the chance to win. Because if someone can vote just using their conscience and not following party lines, they can decide whose ideas they prefer more.
Okay.
And who they identify more with. So it would hurt. It would help us more because of that.
Well, do you is there any reason to believe, or we have any experience maybe from other states, that if there was an open primary in a third party, whether it be Libertarian, Green, or whatever, that Republicans, those of the major political parties, would actually come out and vote in that primary?
I don't know how many statistics are available on that. It seems like it could be likely, because there are a lot of Republicans that are upset with the economic policies of their Republican legislators. There are a lot of Democrats that are upset with some of the civil rights records of some of their legislators. They look at some of the things that are being passed and some of the things they're voting for, and they don't really feel like these people are representing them adequately. So they might, it's got the potential they could do that. I'm not sure if there are statistics on what they have done in the past.
But this is all a moot point, because without ballot access to start off with, I mean, there will be no primary for a Libertarian Party.
Yes, that's
right?
True.
Does the Green Party, are there any other parties here that have met the ballot access requirements?
As far as third parties, the Libertarians and the Reform Party are the only ones that have been on the ballot in Oklahoma.
But they're not currently.
No, we're currently not on the ballot. And we currently have been relegated to the status of a political organization.
Okay.
Which brings up a gentleman that ran for office in 2004 who was a registered Libertarian. His voter registration card said Libertarian on it. But because of our ballot access laws, we didn't make the ballot just by our vote totals. So he was, although he was a registered Libertarian, the party was considered an organization. So he tried to run for office as a Libertarian based upon his voter registration. The election board denied him the request. So then he tried to file as an independent. Well, they wouldn't let him file as an independent because his voter registration card said he was a Libertarian. So he wasn't allowed to register to run for office either way.
The catch-22.
Yeah, and it's basically just to protect incumbent parties.
Okay. Well, we only have two choices now. We have either a Republican or a Democrat. People talk about voter apathy. Do you think there's voter apathy? Or why are people, in your opinion, since you're involved in this more than the average citizen, why are people staying away from the polls?
People are staying away from the polls because currently we have a president that ran in 2000 as a compassionate conservative. And since then, he's proven to be neither compassionate or conservative. His economic policies, you know, he's spent a lot more money than any liberal has in the past 20 years or so. They've noticed that their parties really don't represent their ideology anymore, that they've been watered down. And sometimes the Democrat may be more conservative, in, you know, fiscally, but more liberal in other issues. They've noticed the parties have kind of blended together, and sometimes it's hard to tell the difference anymore. And so they don't really feel like they're being represented when they vote anymore.
Now, if I was a politician in one of the major parties, I would love our current environment. I would not want it to change for all the tea in China, right? I mean,
yes.
There's no incentive. Am I correct in assuming there is absolutely no incentive for me to see the situation change? If we can change the district, where they go gerrymandering the district, and make one a Republican, so we all have our own little fiefdoms all over the place.
Yes.
And everyone's happy with that, and as you said, 38 running unopposed, we don't have to spend much money, but we can still take in contributions, right? And we can use the money as we see fit. This is a runaway train. Why should I? I mean, the only people that can make any changes to the system are the people who don't want to see the system changed. How do you get around that? Short of a revolution, you know.
That's the difficult part of it, is trying to make sure that it gets changed. And a lot of it is, most voters, most average people do not have the time to do the investigation necessary to make an informed decision. Each legislator gets the opportunity in Oklahoma to introduce 8 bills. If you have 100 people, you know, and they're all submitting 8 bills for consideration, that's 800 bills. And let's just say they were all written in plain English where everyone could understand, then that's still 800 bills to read, but there, it's possible to read them. But they're all written in legalese where most of us aren't educated enough to tell what they are. So it's really difficult for the average voter to do something about it. A lot of times I recommend that if someone's been in office for a few years, just to vote against it, just to keep new people in and to keep new ideas flowing. And once someone's been in a couple of times, they've got so many contacts and they owe so many favors, it's very difficult for that person, even if they chose to vote with their conscience when they go to Oklahoma City or when they go to Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Now, we can assume that the average citizen is not going to start now, you know, rallying the cause. Even if every person in Oklahoma was listening to this radio station, they're not going to rally this cause. They may listen, they may say, good point, and tomorrow it's forgotten. Since we have a few more minutes, where do we go from here? How do we take these words and put these words into action to change the political landscape in Oklahoma, or in any state, because this would apply to any state, actually, that is in the same position that we're in, you know, to make it, to move the power from the politician to the voter? How do we do that? What are you going to ask us to do?
That's really difficult. That's so many things have been tried, and a lot of it is really just looking at who you're voting for, looking to see who's on the ballot, and trying to see what sort of positions those people have taken on things. And the easiest way to get voted into office in Oklahoma is to either talk about your religious affiliation, and then people identify with that, and that's what they choose to do. They choose you based upon your religious affiliation, or they look at someone who has volunteered to give them something. And voters have to stop looking at those things. They have to start looking at those as separate issues and looking at a candidate based upon their ideas. What sort of ideas is that person bringing to the table, and are they capable of making those changes? Yeah. Are they capable of fixing things? And looking at individual candidates first.
Am I the only person in the world who is missing something when I hear politicians talk? They talk about programs. They talk about legislation. But I never, ever hear any politician on any level talk about freedom of choice, freedom or liberty, the freedoms and liberty of the individual, and that the individual has the freedom to choose what their life should be like, rather than having someone else legislate it. Am I missing something? Do I miss that comment, or is it that dialogue totally absent from the political arena these days?
It seems like it is. The only valid functions of government are mutual protection. The only reason people get together to have a neighborhood watch is for mutual protection. That doesn't mean that your neighbor has the right to tell you that you can't have a beer after 2 in the afternoon. It doesn't mean that you have the right to tell your neighbor that he has to cut his hedges a certain way. Mm-hmm. It just means that if you notice a prowler in his backyard, it's your responsibility to do something to try to protect that neighbor, because you know that if someone's in your backyard, he's going to call the police for you.
Yeah.
And that's really the only function of government. It's more difficult for me to protect myself than it is for us to get together and protect each other. So the government really doesn't have any, should never have any say-so in any personal issue or moral issues. But that's the government that we live in at this point.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that's not going to change anytime soon, that's for sure. You know,
like
unless there's some major something or other that happens these days. I would suspect that the chore of changing the political landscape is not getting any easier with what the political affiliation we have. Is that correct, or am I just
like
being negative?
Right now, the political spectrum is getting more difficult. But I look at a lot of cultural things. I know a lot of different musicians in the Tulsa area, and I've talked to a lot of them, and a lot of them are becoming more politically minded, and a lot of their music is becoming more political. There are a lot of comedians that call themselves libertarians or identify themselves as outside of the mainstream as far as their political philosophies are concerned. I see a lot of it more in movies. I see a lot of it, the underground coming up through the bottom of the culture. If it can diffuse through the bottom of the culture and it can get in the minds of people, they can begin to think about things differently. So there are some reasons to be hopeful. I just don't know how long it's going to take before that eventually gets to the forefront where people are beginning to look at different philosophies.
Yeah.
So there, I see reasons to think that it could change.
Possibly the current administration in Washington is doing us a favor in a way because of all the discontent with what is going on in the political arena. And maybe this will force people to eventually abandon some of their diehard beliefs. I recall when I ran for office back in the year 2000, I ran for U.S. Congress, after a debate with John Sullivan, who is now our U.S. Congressman, she said, "You know, Mr. Cristiano, I agree with everything you said. She said, "I really enjoyed listening to you." I said, "Thank you." She says, "But unfortunately, I'm a Democrat and I have to vote that way." And she was the nicest little old lady. I mean, she was very elderly and I didn't want to debate her. I didn't have time to debate her. I didn't want to debate her. But it's interesting, the mindset where we talk about what we believe is correct, but we know is wrong, but we do it anyway.
Yeah, it's very difficult to change things that people believe that they're supposed to do.
Right.
And people can agree with you all day long, but if they're a religious conservative, that's what they're going to look for when they vote. If they're a liberal Democrat, that's what they're going to look for when they vote. And it's a shame because they're not really looking at the positions that the people they're voting for are taking on things. They're not voting for individuals. They're voting for just an ideology that person may not even support anymore.
Right. Well, we're coming to the close of our program right now. In fact, we're just about there. Would you like to make any closing comments, any pleads or requests of the people out there in Radio Land? And I'll give you as much time as you'd like.
You know, I would really just like for people to just think for themselves. And although it seems like it's going to take a while, pick one race when you go to vote and just look at two candidates. Let's say on your ballot you're going to have 15 different people, 15 different races. I know it's difficult to look at each person, but most of those candidates have websites now, and most people have internet access, especially the people that are listening right now. It's not very difficult to just pick two races and investigate those people to look and see what their positions are on things and see if those two people fit with your ideology and you think that they're going to do what you would like for them to do as a representative of you. And just try to look at those people and see if you can just try to vote for people that you agree with rather than voting for them just because they're in the same party.
Okay. Good advice to us all. Okay, Jimmy, thank you very much for being on our program this evening. This wraps up this segment of Star of the Beast Network, sponsored by Ranch Acres Audiology. And we've been on the air now for quite some time, a little longer than we had originally anticipated. And I like to play our bumper song. And I'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for sponsoring this program. And please send your comments, your questions, to our website, to our email address at liberty@starofthebeast.net. This is Joe Cristiano. This is Star of the Beast Network. Please tell your friends about our program. Listen in. Send us your comments, your questions, and your criticisms. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned. Thank you.